Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Welcome to episode 442. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, 2026, and we are looking back at the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, June 29th. We have a really fascinating lineup today that touches on some of the most debated topics in the tech community right now.
We certainly do. We are going to talk about a developer who discovered that HackerRank's AI resume screener is basically a random number generator. We also have a fiery piece on why age verification laws are actually just a Trojan horse for ending anonymous speech online.
Plus, we will cover the bizarre story of a fake copyright claim from an uninhabited island trying to scrub the internet of an investigative tech article. A highly controversial political donation by the CEO of the privacy VPN Mulvad. And finally, we will wrap up with the new sweet spot for local AI development, Qwen 3.6.
Let us dive right into that first story. The title on Hacker News was, HackerRank open sourced its ATS. My resume scored 90 out of 100. Oh wait, 74. No, 88. This comes from a blog post by Dan Kinski, and Mike, this is every job seeker's worst nightmare validated in real time.
It really is. So HackerRank recently had their open source applicant tracking system blow up online. Dan decided to run his own resume through it. The first time, he scored a 90 out of 100. He felt pretty good about it. But then he deleted some debug print statements from his setup, ran the exact same resume through the exact same command, and got a 74.
Which is wild. He ended up putting the system in a loop to run his resume 100 times. His scores ranged from 66 to 99. As he points out, if a company has an automated cutoff at 85, his exact same resume fails 65% of the time just based on pure luck.
The breakdown of how this tool works is fascinating and honestly a bit terrifying. It parses your PDF, calls an LLM 6 times to extract your work history, education, skills, and even pulls your GitHub profile. Then it feeds it all back into the LLM to grade you out of 100. The default model is Gemma 3 running at a temperature of 0.1, which is supposed to make the outputs highly deterministic.
But as we know, and as the Hacker News comments heavily discussed, that is not how LLMs work. Dan found that while the technical skills section was consistent, because checking if someone knows React is basically a checklist, the project section was incredibly noisy. Sometimes the AI praised his real-world deployment, and other times it penalized him for lacking architectural complexity.
The Hacker News thread had a massive debate about the math behind this. A user named DVT pointed out that an alarming number of people do not understand that LLMs work via purely stochastic processes. Setting the temperature to 0.1 or even 0 does not guarantee the exact same output every time.
Right. There was this deep dive in the comments about floating point inaccuracies. Basically, in a discrete setting, temperature 0 turns the probability function into greedy sampling. But because of floating point math, especially after exponentiation in the softmax function, you can get tiny inaccuracies that cause the model to pick a different token. When you are generating thousands of tokens, the butterfly effect takes over.
And beyond the math, the prompt design itself was getting roasted. Dan looked at the scoring prompt for work experience, and it was literally 2 lines long with no rubric. A junior engineer with 1 internship gets a perfect 25 out of 25. A principal engineer with 10 years of distributed systems experience also gets 25 out of 25. It is completely useless for actual differentiation. It just becomes a vibe check by a machine.
It is a great warning for any engineers or hiring managers listening. If your company is using AI to screen resumes, you need to audit how it actually behaves. You might just be filtering out great candidates because the GPU flipped a digital coin the wrong way.
Speaking of digital systems controlling our lives, our next story sparked a massive philosophical debate on the front page. The post is titled, "Age Verification is Just a Precursor to Automated Attribution of Speech." It is an anonymous blog post arguing that the recent wave of age verification laws popping up across the US, Europe, and Australia are not really about protecting children.
The author argues that law enforcement and governments have always struggled with the scale of the internet. If you post something inconvenient or illegal online, finding out who you are usually requires human effort. They have to subpoena the platform, track your IP, maybe deal with VPNs or Tor. It does not scale.
Exactly.
but the author claims that age verification laws are designed to fix this bottleneck for the state by forcing platforms to tie digital accounts to physical identities, like a social security number or a government ID. You create an automated identity attribution system. The chilling warning here is that once enough of the population is verified, posting an inconvenient message could automatically trigger a knock at your door, much like how ISPs used to send automated copyright notices.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly insightful. A user named Onion2K pointed out that this is a classic failure of systems thinking. People struggle to see the second and third order effects of legislation. They hear protect the children and they support it without realizing they are building the exact infrastructure needed for authoritarian surveillance.
There is also a really interesting tangent in the comments about how laws never die. A user suggested that every law should have an automatic sunset period of 1 to 10 years, forcing the legislature to pass it all over again, which led to quotes from classical science fiction about how we need a branch of government whose only job is to repeal laws.
It really highlights the friction between the ideal of a safe internet and the reality of how infrastructure can be weaponized.
And that transitions us perfectly into our third story, which is also about privacy, but from a very different angle. The title is, The CEO of Mulvad is the main financer of the Swedish Örebro Party.
For context, Mulvad is widely considered the gold standard for privacy VPNs. They do not require an email to sign up, they accept cash in the mail, and they have a stellar reputation in the tech community. So it was a massive shock to the Hacker News crowd to learn that the CEO is financially backing a nationalistic political party in Sweden.
The Örebro Party is a local Swedish party. And according to the discussions, they have some pretty heavy anti-immigration rhetoric. The party leader has made statements about deporting what he called social welfare parasites and claiming Sweden belongs to the Swedes.
As you can imagine, this caused an absolute firestorm on Hacker News. In fact, the original link was a Mastodon post that ended up getting deleted or rate limited, but the discussion on HN raged on with over 1,200 comments.
It actually turned into a fascinating meta discussion about Hacker News itself. A lot of users were questioning why a political post was allowed on the front page, since the site guidelines generally discourage pure politics. Dang, the head moderator, actually had to step into the thread multiple times. He explained that while most political articles are off-topic, this one directly involved a beloved tech company, and the community clearly had a huge appetite to discuss the implications.
It is a tough spot for users who rely on Mulvad. You buy a VPN because you want privacy and you trust the company's ethics. Finding out the CEO uses the profits to fund a political movement you might find abhorrent forces a really uncomfortable decision. Do you separate the tech from the founder, or do you vote with your wallet and move to a different provider?
The comments were totally split. Some people argued that as long as the code is open source and the servers are secure, the CEO's personal politics do not matter. Others felt that funding a VPN is fundamentally about trusting the people running it, and this broke that trust. It is definitely a story that is going to have lingering effects on Mulvad's reputation in the privacy community.
Let us shift gears to another kind of internet drama. The pragmatic engineer, Gurgly Oros, published an article titled, "Pollen Tried to Remove My Article and Google is Assisting with It."
This is a wild abuse of the copyright system. Back in 2022, Gurgly wrote a highly detailed factual exposé about the collapse of an events tech company called Pollen. He documented unpaid wages, missing pension contributions, and a massive double charge to customers that the CTO manually initiated and never reversed. It was a terrible look for the founders.
Fast forward to now, 4 years later, and someone is trying to scrub this history from the internet. Gurgly found out his original article was removed from Google search results because of a DMCA copyright infringement claim.
And the claim is completely bogus. It was filed by someone named Ellie Pye, claiming that Gurgly's original reporting was somehow copied from a 1998 New York Post article about a band leader. The two articles do not share a single sentence. But the craziest part is the address of the person filing the claim.
Yes, the filer claimed to reside on Bouvet Island. For those who are not geography nerds, Bouvet Island is an uninhabited Norwegian territory near Antarctica. It has zero people on it. It is considered the most remote island in the world. And yet, Google accepted this DMCA takedown request from a fake person on an empty island and delisted the article.
The Hacker News comments really honed in on why this happens. It is a fundamental flaw in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. the law mandates that platforms like Google must take down content when reported, or else they lose their safe harbor exemption and become legally liable for the content. Google does not have the time or incentive to act as a judge, so they just comply with everything, even if the claimant lives with penguins.
A user named PieBaker pointed out that this allows bad actors to use platforms as shields. Someone suggested that claimants should have to verify their real identity to file a DMCA. But then another user jumped in and said, if Google required a government ID to file a copyright claim, the front page of Hacker News would be screaming about Google's privacy overreach. It is a massive catch-22.
Gergely is appealing the takedown, and ironically, by trying to silence him, whoever filed this claim just triggered the Streisand effect. Now the entire Hacker News community is reading about Poland's collapse all over again.
We love a good Streisand effect. All right, for our final story, let us talk about some actual code. The post is titled, Qwen 3.6.27b is the sweet spot for local development. This is a blog post by Piotr Migdal reviewing the new open weight models.
We have talked a lot about the explosion of local AI over the last year, but Piotr argues that Qwen 3.6.27b is the first local model that actually makes sense as a general intelligence for daily use. It punches way above its weight class, benchmarking somewhere between early 2025 Claude 4 and GPT-5.
He tested it on constrained writing tasks, like writing an 8-line poem about quantum physics and Zook dance, and it nailed it. Then he asked it to code a hexagonal Minesucker game using PNPM, and it worked on the first try from a single prompt.
He recommends running it using llama.cpp instead of a llama. He downloaded an 8-bit quantized version from Hugging Face and got it running locally on his Mac. The performance is impressive. He was getting about 30 tokens per second on an M5 Mac, which is well within the typical API speed you would get from a cloud provider.
But the Hacker News comments came with a massive warning label for anyone trying this at home. A user named Ayugar said, I love my Mac, but do not buy a laptop to do serious coding with local LLMs. He said your fingers will burn and your head will explode from the fan noise.
Yeah, he recommended buying a Mac Mini, sticking it in your basement and connecting to it over Tailscale. Another user chimed in saying they run it on a desktop with an RTX 5090, and it eats up about 28 gigabytes of VRAM.
There was a great tip hidden in the thread, though. Someone mentioned that if you are running these heavy models on a Mac laptop, put your computer in low power mode. You drop from 80 tokens a second down to about 38, but the fans stay off and the laptop stays cool. If you turn on speculative decoding, you can offset a lot of that speed loss anyway.
It is just amazing that we are at a point where you can run a model this smart entirely offline, without paying a subscription fee and without sending your proprietary code to a server. Piotr mentions in the article that we are entering an era where businesses can finally use frontier-level AI on sensitive data securely. Qwen 3.6 seems to be the bridge getting us there.
It really feels like the local AI ecosystem is maturing from toy projects into actual production tools.
Absolutely. Well, that is all we have for you today on HN Pod. From random resume generators and uninhabited island copyright trolls to the future of local AI and internet privacy.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to read any of the articles or dive into the comment threads we talked about today, you can find all the links on Hacker News. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories. Have a great day, everyone.